Morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next case on our calendar today is A21-1680 in the welfare of the children of MLS. We are hearing this matter by Zoom today. Each party will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal. Hopefully you can see the timer in your grid view that will show you how much time you have remaining for your oral argument. And we are recording the oral argument here today. The audio recording will be available on our website in the near future. Just a reminder to anyone who's watching, there are no other recordings of this oral argument permitted except with the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. So with that, we can proceed. I'll ask counsel to please identify yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. Counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready, you can proceed.
Is the court?
Well, we can't hear you. Sorry. Marshall, can you stop the clock, please? Thank you. No. If only we could read lips. I'm glad it's gotten sorted out. Can you see the timer on your grid screen? Okay, very good. You can proceed when you're ready.
Your Honor, may it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Berbesca Ward, and I represent appellant paternal aunt in this appeal. This is the third time paternal aunt has been before this court. In its prior presidential decision, this court reversed the district court's denial of paternal aunt's motion to intervene. In doing so, it urged the district court and the parties to follow the legislature's directive to consider relatives first. Nonetheless, motions for adoptive placement and visitation with niece, the county opposed both motions and the district court denied both motions. Paternal aunt is again looking to this court to correct the district court's errors. First, she requests that this court remand to the district court with instructions to create a visitation plan between her and her niece. District court abused its discretion when it denied the visitation plan, or when it denied the visitation motion because it failed to properly apply the law when it disregarded the legislature's directive to ensure contact with relatives. It also resolved the visitation issue in a manner that defied logic and facts in the record when it relied on stale testimony from the TPR trial and ignored the current agency report that indicated that niece is doing well overall and that she interacts with new people in the community all the time. The tragic result of this decision is ultimately for niece. She is being continually denied an opportunity to develop any meaningful connections to her family, which matters regardless of her ultimate placement in this case. Second, paternal aunt requests that this court remand for an evidentiary hearing on her motion for adoptive placement. As a licensed relative with an approved adoption home study, and the court and the parties acknowledging her suitability as a placement option, she has far exceeded her low burden of establishing a prima facie case, and the agency has been unreasonable failing to make the adoptive placement of niece with her. Hearing. Importantly, niece deserves that her placement with a relative is fully explored and that the court make a determination based on all of the evidence in the matter. The district court's errors on the motion for adoptive placement are thoroughly briefed, and I'm happy to answer any of the court's questions.
Can I just jump in here on your second issue, Ms. Beska-Warg? I'm wondering if there's any argument to be made that the district court's decision disregarded the instructions of this court in the decision remanding the case.
It absolutely did, Your Honor. This court explicitly said and urged the district court to consider relatives first, which is a directive from the legislature. The court did not do that. The court made no mention in its order of the fact that paternal aunt, blood relative, is the preferred placement option under Minnesota law. Same goes for the visitation issue. The law says that at review hearings and post-permanency matters, the court is supposed to consider whether...
Counsel, you're cutting out again.
I apologize, Your Honor. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, thank you.
The court must ensure that contact with relatives continues even in post-permanency matters, and the court did not do that in this case. So it absolutely did ignore the directive from this board, as well as the directive from the legislature, to consider relatives first.
Another question for you, again, on that second issue. I'm wondering if you're making the argument in your brief, I can't quite tell. I think you might be, that it is always unreasonable, maybe unreasonable as a matter of law, when a district court fails to follow the statutory mandate to consider relatives first. Is that what you're arguing essentially?
It is essentially what we're arguing, Your Honor. In cases where we have a suitable relative with an approved adoption home study and they and the court are essentially not following the law regarding relatives, there is presumptively a case that the agency has been unreasonable. And that is what we are arguing in our brief. Your Honor, there are a few of the arguments that I would like to highlight here for the court. First, regarding the proper treatment of the motion papers, which this court reviews de novo, the district court is required to accept all of paternal aunt's allegations as true, disregard any contrary allegations, and then consider any other allegations only to the extent that they provide context. Importantly, the court does not find facts as alleged by the movement. So even though the facts in this case are supposed to be those alleged by the movement, which...
You're still cutting in and out, counsel. Sorry, if you could...
I apologize. I'm...
Maybe move the... There you go.
The volume. Does that help?
Yes. Well, hopefully.
So even though the facts are supposed to be those alleged by the movement, which here is paternal aunt, the order is nearly devoid of any of the allegations made by aunt in her moving papers. Instead, the district court focuses its order and its analysis primarily on the allegations made by the foster parents. It goes through a lengthy sort of best interest analysis based essentially verbatim statements made by the foster parents in their moving paper or in their affidavits in response to move-in's papers. This is improper at this stage of the proceedings. The facts, again, are those alleged by the movement.
So the county argues that appellant's motion, this is at page 13 of their brief, that appellant's motions. Pleadings lack specific facts and information regarding how placing the child with appellant is in the child's best interest. Can you address that argument, whether there's enough specificity in appellant's motion pleadings?
So first, there is enough specificity, but I want to highlight that at this stage of the proceedings, the district court is supposed to determine whether the movement has made a case that the agency has been unreasonable. Specifically about the best interests of the child. In this case, the affidavit goes through many.
So you're cutting in and out again.
I apologize. Where the county did not.
Are you saying the best interests are not relevant to the determination of unreasonableness?
So it may be part of what makes up an affidavit for unreasonableness. However, There are also many facts alleged in that affidavit regarding what the agency failed to do in terms of its obligations when it comes to relatives. And so it's not that the best interest is completely irrelevant to the movement, but the other placement, in this case, the foster parents, is not relevant at this stage of the proceedings.
Thank you.
I would also like to highlight that the district court imposed the wrong burden on paternal aunt. Paternal aunt is required by statute to establish a prima facie case that the agency was unreasonable when it failed to make the adoptive placement with her. Here, the district court determined that the paternal aunt failed to allege facts showing that the agency's decision to place the child for adoption with the foster family was unreasonable, irrational, or capricious. It's not this stage of the proceedings to prove that the agency's decision to place the family was unreasonable, and this is error. And for that reason, this court must reverse. Third, the district court went out of the bounds of the prima facie analysis when it made two determinations that can only be an evidentiary hearing on a motion for adoptive placement. First, whether the agency actually was unreasonable, and second, which adoptive family is the most suitable to.
We can't hear you again. Now we can hear you.
The court in this case went so far as to say that it would have been unreasonable, patently unreasonable, to position this fragile soul at any stage of these proceedings to a family unfamiliar to her. This determination, importantly, it is improper at this stage of the proceedings to make a determination on what actually was reasonable or unreasonable. The question is simply, did Aunt in her moving papers establish a prima facie case of unreasonableness? And the district court abused its discretion when it determined that paternal aunt failed to establish a prima facie case of unreasonableness. In cases, as I noted before, where the movement is a relative and the preferred permanency option under Minnesota law, and that relative asserts that they have an approved adoption home study, that they are a fit and willing relative that can provide an adoptive home for the child, and they allege that the agency has disregarded or not met their statutory obligations regarding relatives, that relative has presumptively met their burden of establishing a prima facie case of unreasonableness. In closing, we would ask the district court to reverse the district court's order regarding visitation and motion for adoptive placement and remand to the district court for a reasonable visitation plan and for an evidentiary hearing on paternal aunt's motion for adoptive placement. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Deb Grayler. I'm an assistant Olmsted County attorney, and I represent the respondent Olmsted County in these proceedings. The question before the court today is whether the appellant's motion and supporting documents set forth allegations which, if true, show that the county acted unreasonably in failing to place the child with the appellant for adoption. The answer to that question is no, and the district court's decision dismissing the appellant's motion should be affirmed. The district court order makes it clear that the court did consider the appellant's moving papers or motion papers as true in this case. And it also indicates that the county was not unreasonable in failing to place the child with the appellant. With regard to appellant's statement that it is always unreasonable or argument that when the court does not place a child with a relative that they have met their burden of proof or automatically established a prima facie case, I submit that the case law does not support that assertion. There was a recent case decided by this court regarding SD, I believe, were the initials in the opinion. That was an unpublished case, but there was a grandmother in that case whose motion for adoptive placement was also dismissed without an evidentiary hearing. And so this court did not follow that process in determining whether the grandmother in that case established a prima facie case. The court did consider the appellant's motion and the facts that were alleged in her affidavit as true. But what the court did in this case is conduct an overall best interest analysis and determine that it would not be in the child's best interest to place the child with the appellant for adoption.
Wasn't this best interest analysis sort of premature, though, given the plain language of the statute, which requires a court first to determine whether an evidentiary hearing is required, and then upon that evidentiary hearing occurring, then to consider the best interests issue?
Your Honor, I can understand that argument or that view of the statute, but I think the agency is required to consider those things when making a placement decision when there's a child who is a ward of the state of Minnesota, as is true in this case. So Minnesota Statute 260C.212 not only considers the order of placement preferences, but it also outlines those best interest factors that the agency must review when deciding where a child should be placed for adoption. So I think it's both of those things that have to be considered when evaluating whether a motion for adoptive placement meets that prima facie standard that the agency was unreasonable in failing to place the child with the moving party. Case law has also established that
Ms. Traylor, can you find or look for that case you were talking about where this court did not require a prima facie case on the moving party?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You referred to SD. I don't see it. Yes. I was trying to find that, but maybe there's you've got it handy.
I do. Yes, it is the matter of the welfare of the children of SD. And that opinion was issued on June 28th of 2021. The Westlaw site is 2021 Westlaw 2645665. And I apologize if I misstated that, but I was trying to say that the grandmother in that case, this court held that the grandmother had failed to establish a prima facie case, and she was a relative. And the court, I do not believe, conducted the analysis that the presumption that she could establish a prima facie case simply because she's a relative, that would equate to a finding that the county was unreasonable simply because she's a relative.
I think the argument here is a little more subtle, though. I think the argument here is that that the aunt was not considered as a placement, contrary to the dictates of 260C212 subdivision 2A1 and 2. You know that that statute requires first that family be considered as a placement, and then second that others, including foster families, be considered as a placement. And so I think that maybe distinguishes this case a little bit from the SD case that you cited. Would you agree with that?
Sure. I think that's the appellant's argument here. But I would argue that she was considered. She, by aunt's own assertion in her moving papers, she received a relative notification letter. She was contacted by the county. She was invited to attend the family group conference. She attended that conference. She expressed an interest in being the adoptive placement. the child protection social worker, the adoption social worker, and the guardian ad litem went to aunt's home and met with her and her husband, answered any questions that she had, talked about where the case was procedurally at that point, and indicated that there would not be a decision on adoptive placement until after the termination of parental rights occurred. So I would argue on behalf of the county that the aunt was considered. The county made a relative search here. It was difficult because of the father of the child being in and out of jail and unavailable. So it was difficult to find paternal relatives, but the county made diligent efforts to do that and considered appellant. Ultimately, given the overall best interest analysis that the county and the guardian ad litem conducted, they elected not to move the child, and the district court did support that decision. Even after this court's opinion regarding the motion to intervene, which was a different issue, but the appellant was made a party to the case and then was able to again bring her request forward. And as the district court noted,
in its order in determining whether appellant made a prima facie case, it appears that the district court relied heavily on information from the county and the foster parents and really didn't consider, in the best interest analysis, assuming that's appropriate, there is no real mention of the information in aunt's affidavit. So how did the district court meet its obligation to consider whether aunt made a prima facie case, given that it didn't consider, its decision doesn't reflect any consideration of the specific information provided by aunt in her affidavit as to a number of those factors?
Well, I think I would agree with you that the district court's order certainly contains a lot of the best interest factors that were mentioned in the foster parents' motion papers and affidavit. However, those factors, that information was not used to rebut what the appellant submitted.
I mean, it really seems like it's a weighing of the evidence because the district court accepts those facts and basically rejects facts provided by the aunt that are in her affidavit and not even mentioning them.
Your Honor, I think what's complicated or maybe a little different in this case is the fact that some of that information had already been provided to the court in the context of the termination of parental rights proceeding. And so the court was very aware that this child had been in placement since 2019, that before our county got involved, the foster parents had been involved with the child in other child protection proceedings in Hennepin County. And so certainly the court, I think, considered that information for context. And it's difficult to not to include that information in determining the overall best interest of the child. I think the court acknowledged that appellant is a relative. She is the same race and culture of the child, but those are only two of the factors that are to be considered when determining what is in the best interest of the child. And in this case, this was an extremely difficult case with children who experienced severe trauma, abuse, and neglect in their parents' care. And I think that was the overriding concern for the court and has the district court and has been throughout this process. And appellants moving papers simply don't establish that the county was unreasonable in failing to place the child with appellant, given the overall best interest analysis involving this particular child who has been in out of home care for over 2 years.
Would you agree, though, that the district court's best interest analysis doesn't reference any of the information provided by appellant in the supporting affidavit?
I would agree with that, Your Honor, and I think that appellant's affidavit in support of her motion, again, really centers on the fact that she's a relative. I think that's the argument here, that she's a relative and she therefore the county was unreasonable in failing to place with her. The county acknowledges that she's a relative and that the order of placement suggests that relatives be considered, but that does not equate to shall place with. And the county did consider appellant here, and the court determined that they were not unreasonable in failing to place with appellant. Unless the court has additional questions at
I
this
do,
time.
Absolutely. Yeah, sorry. I know you're trying to wrap up. I just want to sneak one more in. I am wondering about, and maybe this is more of a theoretical question. I don't know that we're going to necessarily find a case exactly on point, but in considering this question of unreasonableness, what is the scope of our inquiry? Are we evaluating one home versus another home and limited in that respect? Or can we consider other things, including what I think the bulk of appellant's affidavit is focused on, and that is the procedures of the case, sort of what was happening behind the scenes. So any help you could give me with that question would be much appreciated.
I think that's a very good question, and one that those of us who are handling these cases certainly grapple with. Ultimately, I think it has to come down to what's in the best interest of the child, and the procedural history of the case certainly plays a part in that, in looking at how long the child has been in out-of-home placement, what happened throughout the child's foster care placements. In this case, at the time that the child was moved to the current foster parents' home, she had been in four or five different placements. There were a lot of challenging behaviors and things that were happening at that time. As I stated earlier, the county did not find out about appellant right away. And certainly the timing created a difficult situation in trying to determine the best way to stabilize this child and get her into a placement where all of her needs were being met. Again, I think it's difficult to look at, one point in time without considering the information that was available to the district court from the beginning of this case until we get to the point of the adoptive placement and what the court is considering, given that the court has presided over the case during that time and heard all of this information from mental health professionals, foster parents, social workers, the guardian ad litem, about what's best for this child. Thank you. I have nothing further, and I would just ask that this court affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Any rebuttal? Oh, some new technology. Excellent.
Host needs to allow us to do a different video, if possible. This is, I believe, Natalie Netzel.
It's Brooke Besco work laptop.
My name, still Brooke Besco Ward, and then in parentheses, laptop.
I see it. Maybe I can just do it. How do I do it? Okay. Great. Thank God.
We can see you now in the with your new view, Spesco Award.
Great. Thank you so much. And I appreciate the patience. I apologize for the technology issues here.
No problem.
Your Honor, I want to just highlight again that at this stage of the proceedings, the best interest analysis does not occur. What we are looking at is whether the movement has made a prima facie case that the agency was unreasonable. The movement may allege facts in their affidavit that talks about the best interests of the child and how they are able to meet the best interests of the child. But what happened at this stage was that the court actually made a best interest determination, which is improper. Paternal aunt did make allegations as to how she can meet the child's needs. She talks about the fact that she is a family member, that she shares the same culture and history as her niece, that she is a mental health provider, that she has experience working with children who suffer from mental health issues. And so she talks about how she is uniquely suited to meet the needs of this child. In addition, she talks about what procedurally happened and how the agency did not meet its obligation of considering relatives, of considering relatives without delay, making placement with relatives, of allowing visitation with relatives, and those must be considered as well.
Ms. Beska-Ward, the county's arguing that they did consider the best interests of the child, at the outset of the proceedings and during the proceedings. What is your response to that?
That is something that needs to be explored at an evidentiary hearing. That is exactly why we are here. We need to know what the reasons were for the agency deciding not to place with paternal aunt. But at this stage of the proceeding, the prima facie stage of the proceeding, the court need to simply determine whether aunt made a prima facie case that the agency acted unreasonably when it failed to make the placement. I would also just highlight that the language is not failing to consider the placement, it's failing to make the placement. So this really is an issue for the evidentiary hearing, along with what is ultimately in the best interest of the child.
So how would you define unreasonable as used in the statute?
So unreasonable, this court has looked both to the dictionary definition of it, which is irrational or capricious. It has also used a zoning law from a zoning law case from the Supreme Court, which basically says that the reasons need to be supported by law and there need to be facts in the record supporting that decision. Here, it's clear that the law was not followed based on paternal aunt's allegations that the agency was not keeping contact with her, was not allowing visitation, was not keeping her updated about the progress of the case. So under that definition or under that analysis, it would fit as well.
Thank you.
And if the court has no further questions, I would again just ask the court to reverse the district court's orders regarding visitation and the motion for adoptive placement, remand with instructions to create a reasonable visitation plan and for an evidentiary hearing on aunt's motion for adoptive placement. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments and the helpful briefs. In terms of the timing of our decision, I know that there's some question as to whether the 60-day time period applies or the 45-day time period applies, and that the county's requested that we issue our opinion within the 45 daytime period. Given the county's request, it's the panel's intention to issue our decision within 45 days, and we will do so. So that concludes the oral arguments on our calendar today.